Zito from 7th to 1st in the final event. You are a champion.
And Oleksiak has done it! The girl from the 6 has got 6 Olympic medals!
The substitute for Canada just about gets it through! It's a glory gold for Canada!
Kathy Lefty goes up to Graham, takes the lead, looks a winner, draws away from Graham and Mary. This is a famous victory, a magnificent performance. What a legend. What a champion.
It is Off the Podium, an Olympics podcast coming to you once again for an athlete interview. Continuing on with sport climbing, O'Shanna McKenzie on last week, Campbell Harrison on this week. Campbell will be making his Olympic debut in Paris later this year in sport climbing. Missed out on Tokyo in 2020, and we find out just what happened around that and the emotional toll that took on him, and how then qualifying for Paris really exploded all the emotions that had been built up over the last few years after not making it to Tokyo. A very open, honest chat here with Campbell around that. We also learned some unique aspects around sport climbing and the training side of things, about one part of his body that he really has to train a lot more than other sports do. And as you'll hear us talk about in this chat, very few sports rely on this part of the body for you to really train on. So it's a very unique aspect of the sport of sport climbing. Also touches on a different side of the reaction to sport climbing being added to the Olympics, as well as what we can expect from him in Paris later this year. It's a great chat with Campbell. You're going to love it, and you're going to listen to it right now. Our chat with Australian Olympic sport climber Campbell Harrison. Well, after a couple of years of not speaking to anybody from the sport of sport climbing, we are doubling up, two in a week, essentially, after a great chat with O'Shanna McKenzie last week. We are now speaking to Australia's other representative at the Paris Olympic Games later this year in the great sport of sport climbing, Campbell Harrison. We're going to learn a lot about his career and everything else in between, and get excited for the sport returning to the Olympics this year. First of all, Campbell, I'll start by saying welcome to the show. It's a pleasure to have you on Off the Podium today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. Excited to be here.
I am excited to chat to you because as we spoke to Osh last week and sort of said about how I feel a bit bad that we'd gone this long without getting a sport climber on the show, we spoke to Tom O'Halloran just ahead of Tokyo and we just haven't had anybody on since. And we fell in love with this sport during the Olympics a couple of years ago, having not been too exposed to it. So we're rectifying that. But just the time of us recording this, we were talking a little bit off air about we are recording this the day after you were formally announced to the world next to Anna Mears, officially going to the Olympics. I just want to start there. How has the last 24 hours been for you now that this is all kind of out there? You've had all these media interviews and everything along those lines.
Yeah, it's been busy. Yesterday was a busier day than I expected, and then today is quite busy as well. But it's exciting. It's exciting to finally, you know, have it kind of out there and official that it's happening, and makes it feel that little bit more real, I guess. So, lots has been going on.
Which I can imagine any sort of exposure for yourself and the sport as well is fantastic, because again, we touched on that with Osh, kind of what that brought after Tokyo with a lot of people like myself and other people who weren't really overly familiar with the sport. But I guess you kind of take these moments very highly when you've got Channel 9, Channel 7, you know, these sort of people there wanting to speak to you, where maybe in a regular non-Olympic year, they're maybe not wanting to do that as much.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, it's a really, really good opportunity for the sport and for us to, like, grow our profile, you know, like, as pro athletes, it's obviously so important that we are able to, like, get out there and share our story. And then obviously for the sport being so new to the Olympics, it's really nice that people have this opportunity, like, get excited about it, and then hopefully they decide to tune in when the games show in Paris, and, you know, yeah, they'll get to learn a little bit more about the sport that we're so passionate about.
How did you get passionate about it, Campbell? What brought you into sport climbing?
Yeah, it was just something that I asked my dad one day if I could try when I was maybe like 8 years old or so. I was like an adventurous kid. I liked to climb and like just, you know, trees and buildings and playgrounds and all that sort of stuff, you know. So I just asked that if I could give it a go, and I think climbing was quite different to maybe what 8-year-old me expected it to be, but it was something that I like really enjoyed straight off the bat, and just slowly over the course of years, started doing more and more of it. And then, you know, once I got into my teens and I started competing, that was the side of it that I really fell in love with. And I was instantly very driven to try and always do better. Yeah, and it just took off from there, really.
Was it a case of, you know, when you were starting and kind of doing it more for fun, that you were aware there was a competitive side to it? Or was that when, as you were saying, you got to your teenage years that that sort of opened up and that's when you realized that, hey, this is something I can, you know, go to events in and compete in a little bit more?
Yeah, I knew of the competitive side to a degree. Like one of the girls in the same group as me when I started was she's a bit older than me, but she was very competitive and was going to like youth world championships overseas and that sort of thing. So I kind of knew it existed, but I don't think I had much of a concept of like the scale of these events or the standard of climbing. And yeah, and it took a while before I actually started to like get involved in them. But I definitely never foresaw it as something that would take me to the Olympics. You know, it was I always just accepted that climbing like wasn't an Olympic sport. And especially when I started, it was very it was very niche and small scale. So the fact that it's like blown up in the way that it has come as like a very pleasant surprise, I guess, in a lot of ways.
Were the Olympics something that you watch sort of just every 4 years or every 2 years if you pay attention to the winters as well? So, you know, outside of the fact that, as you said, you didn't think this would be a thing, but you watch the Olympics in general.
Yeah, definitely as a kid in school, I remember the Olympics would be like a really big deal every time it came around. Yeah, all of the, especially in like primary school, all of the homework and everything would become very centered around the Olympics. And, you know, you have kids in the same way that kids would say, oh, when I grow up, I want to be an astronaut. They'd say, oh, when I grow up, I want to be an Olympian. And I don't think I ever had that kind of, yeah, I don't think I ever thought that the Olympics was something that I would grow up to do, as cool as I thought it was. Yeah, so it's kind of crazy that it's something I'm going to be doing now.
Did you have particular sports that were kind of your favorites when you were growing up watching the Olympics?
I think still now, like I've always enjoyed the really artistic sports. So like gymnastics and figure skating and synchronized swimming and that sort of thing. And I wouldn't say I was like following the sports necessarily, but when the Olympics is on or when these sports are on TV, those are the ones I would tend to gravitate to. I think I didn't get super sucked into like the nitty-gritty details of the sports, but I just really appreciated the artistry and the athleticism of what they could do. So that's also like what I'm really excited to hopefully watch some of in Paris, as well as some of those like strengthy artistic sports.
Which, I mean, the beauty of this being your first Olympics, Campbell, is you'll actually be able to watch these sports, unlike, say, Tokyo, where obviously, unfortunately, all the restrictions and everything that kind of prevented that. Were you, outside of climbing, were you involved in many other sports at all? Were you sort of like standard Aussie kid going around trying your hand at different sports where you could?
I tried a few different things, but I was quite bad at a lot of sports, honestly. I think it comes as a surprise to people, but like I can hardly catch or throw a ball to save my life. And so I think climbing is a sport that people who aren't very like typically jockey gravitate to. Like I was strong and I was fast and I could run and that sort of thing. Like all the physical fitness aspects were there, but yeah, I never really clicked into any other sports. And then climbing just was instantly very different for me.
Which I'm sure you can reflect back now on people at school, right? Like we all dealt with the jocks and those sort of people. And I mean, how many of them went on to become Olympians, Cammy? We're talking to you now as an Olympian, and they're probably looking at this going, well, yep, I
Yeah,
got that wrong.
I had kids at school tell me very like blank to my face, flat out, like that their like local soccer team was more elite than my world championships because they just didn't see climbing as like a
Wow.
sport. And they, yeah. And I like in however many years I was in high school, I never won the sporting award. Like every year there would be like an award for best athlete and I never won it, even though I was like state champion, national champion, world championship semi-finalist, like all these things. There was just like no recognition for what I was doing. The teachers were like, oh, if you do all these competitions, your grades are going to be terrible. And then there would be like surprised to my face when my grades were like still maintained despite everything I was doing. Yeah, so it's a very climbing in my sport is in a very different place to where it was when I was in high school, that's for sure.
It definitely sounds that way. I mean, I've got, you don't have to name and shame the school at all, Campbell, but in terms of, has it ever produced an Olympian before? Are you the first Olympian to come from your school?
I don't know, honestly. That would be
Let's just say you are.
Question.
Screw your school. There you are. That's why that's where you are today.
Yeah, there you go.
That's crazy to think that. But I mean, it is obviously, you know, different time now to when it was obviously then, because I can imagine that when you're going to things like world championships and things like that versus to when you're going to them today, that it's obviously a much different experience than it used to be.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, the professionalism of the sport has grown a lot, and just like the fan base of the sport, I think I think the amount of people who engage in climbing purely as spectators has really changed. You know, obviously in other sports like AFL or tennis, you know, so many of the people who come to watch the sport maybe don't pick up a racket or pick up a footy or anything like that. And for the longest time, like only really climbers were engaging in climbing, and that's definitely changing. And that's quite evident when you go to World Cups that people from all walks of life are engaging in it as a spectator sport, which is quite cool as well.
And did you find then, like, if you remember your first, say, competition outside of Australia and perhaps in a place where it's a, you know, I don't want to say Australia wasn't advanced, but in terms of just like, I'm thinking, say, like a country of like Slovenia, which I think is obviously, you know, right up there in the sport climbing at the top of the ladder. Do you go to a place where maybe you think, wow, like look at where the sport is here, and that you hope that that is something that Australia can reach those levels at, and basically where you had started from?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, the sport has grown so much here, and there are so many more facilities and climbers in every major city. But yeah, at the same time, there's still this very stark difference when you travel to somewhere like France or Japan or Slovenia or Austria, and you see these kind of mega facilities that they have, and the standard of climbing at a commercial level is just so high. But yeah, I think climbing in Australia is just growing so fast. So even though I wouldn't say we're quite there yet, you know, we're so much further along that sort of trajectory than I would have expected at this point. And so, yeah, I think it'll only be a matter of time before we have facilities and climbers that can match that standard overseas.
Where's the hub for climbing in Australia? If you had to, if right now I woke up tomorrow and wanted to be a climber, Campbell, where am I moving to? Where's the best place for climbing in Australia?
Like sticking purely to like indoor competition climbing, I would say probably Sydney. Sydney would have like the highest density of climbing gyms, and strong climbers. Yeah, and then Melbourne or Brisbane, quite good as well. Brisbane has like fewer gyms, but the ones they have are quite good. I think Perth actually has quite a cool scene at the moment as well. So I wouldn't say there's exactly like a centralized hub, but if you had to pick like one city that had the most facilities, you'd probably go to Sydney.
Do you think that might change in the next 8 years should sport climbing continue on into the Brisbane Olympics? Obviously, you know, we're going to have a lot of things happening in sport in Australia over the next 8 years, but that maybe they will try and centralize it to try and help that and help the growth of the sport in the lead up to a home Olympics?
Yeah, I think so. It's a very interesting question, and I am really curious to see what happens, because obviously like the games are going to be in Brisbane, so there's going to be funding and incentive to have like a team facility there. But in terms of like the climate, like the weather and the temperature to train, I feel like Melbourne and Sydney is probably a little bit more comfortable year round as a place to host like the national training facility, or like, you know, as or a competition venue, for instance. So it's going to be somewhere along the East Coast, but we'll have to just sort of wait and see. I think it'll depend, you know, which state federation manages to acquire the funding first to put something together like that. And then I'm sure it'll all just kind of centralize from that point.
As a Tasmanian, Campbell, just saying, we've got some lovely natural landscape down there. So, you know, I don't know how much as a climber you like to go all natural out on the rock faces and all those kind of things. But just putting it out there, if you need an out of the box thought, Tasmania's there.
Yeah, Tassie honestly is really, really beautiful. And Tassie's a great place if you want to like, yeah, live in a city and then be able to experience the outdoors like straight away. And there are a few gyms like sort of popping up in Hobart and stuff lately. So, somewhere like Tasmania maybe could come in from as the underdog and sweep us all. Who knows?
That's what we are. We're generally an underdog. But I mean, on that, in all seriousness, when it comes to, say, natural rock climbing, like outside, in nature and everything along those lines, are there such thing as sport climbing events for kind of like outdoor sort of things like that? Or is it more of a hobby? Like, you're out on a hike and like, hey, I can climb that. I'm an Olympian. I can do that.
Outdoor climbing definitely has like a professional scene. It's a huge sport in and of itself. And a lot of climbers will participate in both. They'll do comps during the comp season and then climb outside and do really, really hard outdoor ascents outside of the competition season. And then obviously some people do just one or the other. I tend to gravitate more or less exclusively towards indoor and competition climbing these days. As far as events, I'd say there are some like festivals and things where people will gather around, but outdoor climbing is done it's very informal. You get like a group of friends together, or maybe just you and a climbing partner, and you head to a particular crag and try to find something to work on for a long period of time or whatever your goals might be. So not so much of like a singular event or anything like that, but people will put a lot of time into their outdoor projects, and very much is like a professional avenue within the sport.
I have nothing but admiration for yourself and people who do it, because I think I did rock climbing once when I was like 12 on like a school trip. Did not, wasn't for me. But then recently, just over Christmas, I went for a hike in Tasmania up Mount Amos near Wineglass Bay. Now, I'm not remotely saying that is any form of rock climbing, but to me it was, because like you
Oh,
are,
I've done that
you've
hike as well.
so
Yeah,
you
there's a
you
bit of
know
scrambling
how
in
it's
there. Yeah.
steep and everything. So to me, that's
Yeah.
about as far as I will go. Right. So I look at sort of the other ones where you do need, I guess, like the actual ropes and things like that for more safety measures, and go, yeah, nah, like Mount Amos, enough for me, I think.
That's fair. That's fair. I mean, I think it's such a different sport probably to when like we were young. And I do meet a lot of people now who tried climbing as kids and didn't vibe with it, and then have tried it now, and it's just evolved so much that it is something that they really like. It's ever changing, and there's always like something new to try within the sport as well, which is cool.
You obviously mentioned sort of progressing through the sport, the Olympics was something that you could never imagine would be possible. But of course, the sport was announced as an Olympic sport back in 2016 during Rio. Do you remember when that announcement came, and then how was your mindset when all of a sudden the Olympics does become a possibility for you?
Yeah, it was an interesting dynamic there. I couldn't tell you like exactly where I was, but I do remember having very mixed feelings initially, because when we were first included in the Olympics, we were only given one set of medals, and climbing has three very distinct disciplines, or at least speed as a very, very distinct discipline, and then lead and boulder as the more like traditional disciplines. And typically, you didn't cross over from one side to the other. And we knew pretty much straight away that it was going to be a combined of all three. And it was kind of strange, because it kind of felt like, I don't know, like you'd been training your whole life as a 100-meter sprinter, and then all of a sudden you had to do like the 100-meter sprint and a half marathon or something, And it was like, well, if you want to go to the Olympics in your sport, you've got to do both. And it was weird, because it's like I'd never aspired to greatness in speed climbing, but I had always aspired to greatness across lead and boulder. And so there was a little bit of like, I was like, oh, because there were people who were successful within their discipline who very quickly decided that they weren't going to try for the Olympic Games. And I had to kind of grapple with that decision, if it was something that I was going to try to do or not. And ultimately I did go for it, but there was always that little feeling in the back of my mind that like when I was training speed, it wasn't really where I wanted to be or what I wanted to do. So it was an interesting one. But then when the format was announced to be changed for Paris, it was like instantaneously a very different experience. It was like, yep, this is what I've always wanted to go to the Olympics for. And it was like a very easy decision to commit wholeheartedly to that,
I love
even after not making it in Tokyo.
Yeah, and we'll obviously touch on that, but I love hearing that other side of it, because I think a lot of people like myself would automatically think an athlete hears that their sport's going to the Olympics and it's like ding, 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 yes, hooray, celebration. But there's always kind of those, I guess, questions. We've had a lot with breakers on this show in the lead up to breaking it being added into Paris, because, you know, there's a lot of fear around the art form being lost when it comes to breaking. They've never really seen it as a sport before, and now it's kind of been treated as a sport. But it's fascinating to hear that, because we touched with that with Osh last week about how speed versus lead and bolt is so different, and how that kind of obviously would affect that. So once you decided to push then towards Tokyo, how do you then balance that training where speed's something that maybe you've not really focused on or not at all, and then kind of you've got to obviously add that now to your repertoire in order to help yourself qualify towards Tokyo?
Yeah, it was really a lot. Like, and no one, you can talk to like anyone at any level. I think you could even talk to like the people who won in Tokyo, and we would all say that like none of us knew what we were doing. No one knew how to best combine training for all three of these disciplines. You know, like you had to be doing, if you're going to be training speed, you need to be fresh and fast. So you got to do that at the beginning of your session. But then there's other kind of like training. Your finger strength also needs to be done at the beginning of the session, because otherwise there's like a high injury risk. And then you're doing just like so many sessions in a day, so many sessions in a week, just trying to fit everything in. And yeah, you're also seeing people left, right, and center get burnt out or injured or whatever it might be. And so we're all just, we're all just kind of going in blindly, doing our best to figure out how to make it work. And then the format itself was so unforgiving that, yeah, it you know, you could have a great day of climbing and then the maths just didn't quite work out right. And it was an interesting experience in that format.
Because I feel, correct me if I'm wrong, that would disadvantage the speed climbers the most, because I can imagine that speed climbers don't necessarily do bouldering and lead at all.
Yeah, like some speed climbers came from boulder lead background and then transitioned into speed, whereas others came from like sprinting or, wow, you know, entirely different sports, and they just speed climb. The only time they're climbing is on the speed wall. And, you know, bringing the lead and boulder athletes into speed dropped the speed times like super quickly. Like there was this really fast increase in the standard of speed climbing. So like that's been cool to see. But yeah, the speed climbers were very much disadvantaged in that format. And so it was quite, I'm quite excited to see the speed climbers get their moment in Paris, because, you know, as much as it was like frustrating for us to have to go to and do speed, it was, I think, infinitely more frustrating and difficult for them to transition into boulder and lead and then come to the event and just, you know, it just didn't make sense for the speed climbers to be competing in that combined discipline. So yeah, I'm very excited for them to have their own set of medals this time around.
Is there a hope that all three will be separate at one point in the Olympics, or is it kind of a case of having boulder and lead combined is still okay?
I think from what I'm hearing, the discussion is to have three sets of medals in Los Angeles at the next Olympics.
Right.
There's some discussion around whether or not we would like to bring in a combined format as well. So maybe have like four sets of medals, and whether that would be, yeah, like three separate disciplines and then all disciplines combined, or if it would be like just lead and boulder combined or whatever it might be. But yeah, I think the idea is to have all three be separate at the next Olympics, which will be nice. But I do like the combined format. It is a bit of fun. So if we did have to continue in that format, like I wouldn't be mad about it, but it would be nice to be able to compete across them separately as well.
One thing you just touched on there around finger training. Now, obviously, yep, they're very important for you in the sport. How do you train your fingers, Campbell? Like this might be the weirdest question I've ever asked, but like, how do you train your fingers?
No, and I think it's such a valid question, because it's probably the most unique aspect of the sport. Like everything else that we do is very like, there are parallels to every other sport, and I guess there is to finger training as well, but you know, Yeah, it is something that we have to do that you don't typically worry about in the sport. And so a lot of it is what we call fingerboard training or hangboard training, where you hang off of a small edge in various positions. So maybe it'll be like with your fingers at a 90 degree or your fingers more open, and you'll hang off these edges for a certain amount of time, and you might add weight to your body, so you hang extra weight plates off of you. And basically, yeah, you're just trying to like trigger adaptations in not only like the muscles in your forearms and in your hands, but like the connective tissue in your fingers as well.
Right.
Because obviously, human fingers aren't designed to be hanging off of 10 mil edges and like catching big swings and having all this force put through them. So it's like this really slow, controlled process of like of building up the strength in these tiny little parts of your body that, are somewhat insignificant in the day-to-day life, but you could tear a tiny little piece of connective tissue within a finger and not be able to climb for months and months. So it's like it's a super important aspect of the sport.
Fascinating, because I can think, I don't know why right now I'm thinking of so many sports that maybe your toes are very crucial, but I'm struggling to come up with sports where your fingers are very crucial. Like, I'm not just, yeah, there's a few and far between.
Yeah, you definitely have sports where like grip strength is important, but usually it's like it's the whole hand. You're not, sometimes in climbing you might have to like do a move off of just one finger on like a tiny little edge or something. And so it's, it's so different in so many ways, and you have to be able to, yeah, make sure your body can withstand that sudden loading. Because like I said, if your fingers aren't strong enough to do what you're asking them to do, then there's a pretty high likelihood that something's going to go twang, and then it can, it can be pretty significant
Yeah.
injury in climbing.
Crazy. I always think about I remember as a kid when I was much more of a cricket fan than I am today, and you'd see the wicketkeeper Ian Healy, and of course, like as a wicketkeeper, he's catching balls like all the time, right? And he would show his hands and his fingers were just like completely bent and deformed and
Oh,
out
yeah.
because of all the thousands upon thousands of balls. Does that happen in sport climbers? Like once sport climbers are retired, are their fingers kind of all a bit all skew-iff after all the climbing they've done in their careers?
A little bit. I think we tend to have these like I have like really short fingers and really big palms, which I think is like quite common, having these short fingers, having really like thick knuckles, like the bone in our knuckles will develop a lot. And yeah, depending on your history of injuries, you might have, yeah, kind of like wonky fingers or fingers that don't maybe bend or
War
straighten.
wounds, right?
Yeah, but I mean, obviously, if you do your best to try and look after your body, and if you rest adequately when injuries do start to pop up, you can hopefully mitigate these factors. But yeah, especially people who get injured in their youth, if you like rupture, because you have growth plates in your fingers that don't fuse until you're an adult. And then if you like tear one of these or rupture one of these growth plates, then it can kind of mess up the development in your hands as well. And so sometimes you'll meet climbers that will have just this like one knuckle that's massive compared to the others. And it's
Wow.
quite likely that they, like messed up a growth plate or something in their youth.
Wow, that's crazy. It's fascinating to hear kind of the differences between the sports. Actually, just quickly for our video audience right now, hold up your hands again. So you obviously got your painted nails. Osh talked about this, about how she gets her
Oh
nails
yeah.
done just before every competition as well. Is this something that you do as well? Like, is that kind of like a thing to get you in the spirit for a competition?
I mostly paint my nails because I have a horrific bad nail biting habit. So having them painted is the only thing that helps me
Smart.
stay away from them for a little bit. But I also do like dabble in the like sort of pre-comp nails, especially if I've managed to not chew them for a while and they're looking kind of nice. But yeah, that's like the main reason that I paint them is to keep them out of my fucking mouth,
That's very
Which as a
clever.
climber is really important because our hands are super gross. So like absolutely should not be chewing my nails, but it's just like a habit I've had since I was a little kid.
Well, here's another question. I can't say I've ever asked a guest on this show about the length of their fingernails before, but does the length of your fingernails affect your climbing?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, you can't have them be too long because then that's gonna like push your like if you're trying to hold on to a small edge and your fingernails are pressing against the wall behind that edge, you're not gonna be able to get in as far. And then also, like your fingernails do contribute to the overall strength of your fingers. And so, like if you have really, really short fingernails, then potentially your fingers aren't as strong. But I mean, like as far as I know, the research hasn't really been done yet to confirm that. But you get people being very superstitious about their fingernails. Like some people insist that like painting your nails makes your fingers stronger because it makes the nail harder, you know, like, so some people will paint their fingernails prior to a comp because they insist that it is better for their climbing.
But this isn't outlawed, like the sporting body. This isn't like performance enhancing, right? You can't have special grippy, nail polish.
I mean, it's very much not established either. I think it would be interesting to see if there's
somebody's working on it, Campbell. It's like when they had those super swimsuits.
It's like, like cyclists shaving their legs. I'm sure there has been more research into that, but it's a similar sort of thing of like, oh, you know, you're doing everything you can, and this is that maybe extra 0.1%. And you know, it's not going to do any harm. So like take a shot on it kind of thing.
Why not? Fascinating. Fascinating. Obviously Tokyo, you ultimately don't qualify. And there was a lot that obviously happened around that period. You were the top ranked climber in Australia, but just give us a bit of an overview of everything that happened there. We don't want to sort of dwell too much on the negatives on this interview, Campbell, but obviously a lot that you went through during that period in the lead up to Tokyo.
Yeah, so yeah, that was a really interesting one. I was going into the event, I was seated in first place, and then the COVID-19 pandemic hit. We went into lockdown, the event was cancelled, and then it was postponed, and then, you know, it was just, we weren't sure if it was ever going to happen. And I was in this really unique position where if it did get cancelled, the spot would pass down to me because I was first seated. And so there was quite an emotional roller coaster dealing with all of that. And I guess some people were quite bitter against me that I was in that position. I hadn't asked for it to be that way, but yeah, there were some things like being said about me because yeah, I was going to take the spot if the event didn't happen. And then the event did end up going ahead. Just prior to the event, my sister had been diagnosed with cancer. So there was this, so that was sort of hanging over my head going into the event. It was, you know, go compete, come home, be with the family before she starts her treatment. And then the event started off not so good. A couple of mistakes happened that pushed me a bit further down the rankings than I would have liked. And then on the day of the final, it was announced that we were going to be going back into a state-by-state lockdown. And it was like, you need to get over the border before midnight or you're going to be in hotel quarantine, which for me and my family meant that I wasn't going to see my family before my sister started her chemotherapy, which was, you know, my parents have always been very, very supportive and they always encouraged me to like put myself and my sport first. But this was kind of the first time in my whole life that they said to me, we really want you back home for Christmas. We really want to spend this time together as a family before this all uproots our life. And so had to make this like very, very quick decision as to what I was going to do. I ended up going to the event, participating in the first discipline, which was speed. And because I'd done poorly, I false started in the speed the day before, which meant I had the worst seeding in the like race brackets. And so that meant that I came out of speed in eighth place. And so my chances of making up that distance in the next disciplines were like, it was possible, but it was very rocky. And so we just decided that a decision had to be made basically then and there. And so we decided to go home. And that's not to say that like, had I stayed, I would have qualified or anything like that. I think Tom's chances were still higher than mine in that time. And he very much like deserved that spot. But it was quite hard to sort of reconcile with the fact that I didn't get to cross the finish line. Like all that work goes in and it was such a drawn out period and so many factors. And then never got to finish it. So, you know, 4 years, 3 years come around and getting to actually like finish what I started with Paris and having it work out. It was like a very, very special moment. And if you watch the qualifiers and you see my reaction and you know that history, like it all makes sense as to why that was such a big moment, because it really was just this, you know, years and years of waiting for another opportunity.
I'm glad you brought that up because that video almost brings me to tears in a way, Campbell, because the thing I love about any athlete in any sport is just the emotion over moments, and that is added, as you said, when you know that story. And it's pure elation from you at the top of that wall when you realize it. I mean, is that the best way to summarize that moment? Pure elation as soon as you realize that it had happened?
Yeah, it was crazy. Like I always like tried to imagine what it would be like, what I would feel like when/if I did it and I qualified. And I was like, will it feel, I don't know, because sometimes you do these, like sometimes you build up so much to something and then you do it and it's just kind of like, oh, cool, awesome. And I was worried that it might kind of be like that. And then when it finally happened, I think, you know, the event itself was so much pressure and so intense. I've never experienced anything like it. And then, yeah, it just all came out and there was elation and pride. There was always also this sense of like relief and like anger and frustration to a degree as well. Like, and it just all came out. It was so much like, if you see the footage, I literally just sat on the floor and cried. And then even when I go off screen and the next climbers come out, I'm just sitting on a couch, head in my hands, just like crying. It was the most surreal experience. And I wonder like if I'll ever experience some kind of like an explosion of emotions like that ever again. Like it was truly surreal.
Which, how long do you allow yourself, I guess, after that to, I want to say, soak it in before you then you switch back into competition mode? Like, I mean, obviously being towards the end of the year, does it's kind of a case of let's go out and celebrate, let's have the holidays and then switch that into it now? Or is it kind of you wake up the next day, go, all right, I've qualified, got a job to do?
Yeah, it's a great question. Fortunately, it was the last comp of the year. So like I did celebrate a little bit that night, but we went out to like a club to have a dance. And I was like, I'm really tired. I just want to go home. And then, yeah, I had like a little holiday with my partner planned to New Zealand. So we went and did that and then came back to training after that. And it has been interesting because like I said, you spend so much time building up to this one thing and it finally happens and you can't believe it. And then you're like, oh shit, I do have the real job starts now. Doing my best to like keep it going really. But yeah, so far it's going okay. The season kicks off quite early for me this year compared to other years. So part of me was like, oh, a little bit more rest would have been nice. But like, yeah, I'm enjoying the process and the challenge of trying to be the best Olympian that I can be when it comes to the games in August for me.
You get introduced by enemies as Spider-Man, so, you know, you can't exactly complain about that. But just on that season, so what is, I guess, now the season for you before Paris?
Yeah, so the first events for me are in China in April. So I'm going to go to Japan to train a little bit there. They have quite good facilities in Tokyo. So I'll do a few weeks there training, compete in China as like little test event, see where I'm at, then head off to the States where there's another comp and I'll be training there as well. Come back home for a little bit and then I'll go to Europe. And there's a few events that lead up to the games. And basically, the plan is to kind of just, use each event as like a little testing pool to see where I'm at, what needs to be worked on, how I can improve, and then, spend some time training with some other teams overseas or in some of these like really well-built facilities and, just try to make all the little changes and do all the little things that need to be done.
Do you set yourself a target for Paris? Do you kind of go into it with a goal in mind?
I don't really have a number in my head. I think partially because only 7 or 8 athletes out of 20 in each gender have been selected. So I don't really know who I'm competing against yet. But also it's my first Olympics. It's a very different competition to something that I've ever competed in. And, I know what my goals are when I turn up to a lead World Cup. I know what my goals are at a Boulder World Cup, but the Olympics is a little bit more unknown. So at this stage, with the limited information that I have about where I'm at now, I'm kind of just trying to do everything right to kind of maximize my potential. I haven't got a specific goal in mind just yet.
Because it's also that unique aspect of your event is in the second week of the Olympics. So you're obviously going to have that sort of that first week into it where I can imagine if you've got the opportunity to go see other sport, things like that, that you kind of want to do. But of course, you've also got to keep your mind on the competition. So like it's, yeah. I guess, do you work with your coach, with the sports side? Do you speak to Osh about sort of, you know, getting some advice around not getting, I guess, swept away in that Olympic fever that you're not used to experiencing when you're just at a World Cup or a World Championships?
Yeah. I think, you know, talking to my coach, talking to other people who have the experience, working with my psychologist, like always going to be all going to be really important aspects of my lead up to the event. I like to think I'm pretty good at keeping my mind focused on the task at hand. I'd like to think I won't get too swept up in the Olympics outside of being ready for my own event. But yeah, I think if I, you know, 6 months out from the games, if I was getting really, really caught up in like specific number goals, I think that might burn out a little bit towards the games themselves. My general approach to sport is just to think it more or less in the here and now, in the immediate future of like, am I doing everything that I could be doing now? And if I am, then that's great. And I need to use that to like mitigate any stress that's happening. And if I ask myself, honestly, am I doing everything that I could be doing? And the answer is no, then I can use that information to assess what more I could be doing, or sometimes what less, like what I could be doing less of to be better prepared for like the upcoming events. So yeah, not getting too caught up in like expectations of what the event's going to be like and just trying to focus on the process.
Well, in that process, coming off the back of 2023 and about to head into this season in 2024, how are you, Campbell, in terms of mentally, physically? Like, how are you, I guess, vibing going into the next couple of months ahead of Paris?
Yeah, I'd say pretty good. I think, you know, a couple little like niggles in my body here and there that are like I hit my hand on the wall the other day, and then that's giving me some grief. So it's not even like an overtraining issue. It's just like I slipped and sort of clocked my hand. And so little like frustrating things like that are holding me back from going 100%. But otherwise, yeah, I'm really excited to kind of get out of Australia and get things started. I really love the feeling of being on the circuit, training and competing with my friends. And I find that aspect of it really motivating as well. And it's really easy to get into that full-time athlete mindset when you're surrounding yourself in it. So I'm just like excited to get started, really.
Bring it on, essentially. I read a great quote from you. I'm not sure how old the interview was. It's on the Sport Climbing website. And the question was asked you, do you have a fun fact about yourself? And you said, before climbing in a final, I simply can't go out before asking everybody what they think of their route, even those in different categories to mine. It helps me calm my nerves and reminds me that everybody in isolation is in the same boat. Now, when you do that, do people catch on to what you're doing? Do they just go, shut up, Campbell, leave me alone? Or is it a case of they know it's like helping you, so maybe they're going to like, you know, it's a close-knit community that they kind of, they know what you're doing?
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I think I'm sure people who know me well know that I'm like, I'm very chatty and I'm a nervous chatter. And so, you know, I will try and strike up a conversation, because a lot of people sort of like to retreat into their own bubble, but I like to very much bring myself out of my own bubble. I don't know. Some people would rather not talk about it too much, but usually people are pretty open to discussing it, and especially within your own field. So like the men will all discuss whatever route we've been presented with, whatever boulders we've been presented with. And I think climbing really encourages you to be open with giving and receiving the like your interpretations of the route or advice and that sort of thing, you know, because if you're willing to share how you interpret the route, other people will share that same or their interpretations back to you. So it's quite important to be open. So I definitely would never do it in a way to like play any mind games with anybody. It's very much just to like,
I was going to ask that. Does that happen? Like, are there, and you don't have to name names, but are there maybe some athletes who do play a bit of mind games and like, oh yeah, I'd totally go this route, that's the way I'd do it, and they're just doing it to kind of suck you out?
Oh, 100%. And they're like, probably more so people, if they think they've spotted something, like we call it a beta break. So beta is like like a method of how to complete a climb. And maybe you'll see something that isn't what is necessarily intended by the route setters when they created the route. And you have like the option to either share that information with everyone else and see what they think, and maybe you'll get a better idea of what it might look like when you're actually on the wall. Or you can choose to keep that information to yourself, knowing that other people then might be keeping information to themselves as well. And I had a really interesting moment at Nationals last year where I did actually share this intention. I was like, oh, I think we can do it this way. And everyone was like, no, I don't think so. I don't think so. And then I was the only one who was able to do the boulder, or do that section of the boulder, because I did this beta break. So,
wow.
Yeah, you know, sometimes listening to other people, maybe they're trying to psych you out, but maybe they're just also not sure of what they're thinking is correct. And so they're bouncing ideas off of you. So
fascinating.
In my opinion, it really is just more effective to be honest and open with everybody. And maybe you'll get valuable information out of that conversation as well.
Now this, I don't know if this is a dumb question or a smart question, Campbell, but I can imagine that going after other competitors is more helpful when it comes, you can sort of study their routes a little bit. Does that help you out, or do you want to go first so you can kind of be that lead person so you can discover the route more so than anybody else?
So actually in most rounds, other than in single discipline lead climbing, in the qualifications, you can watch each other, but in every other round across lead and boulder, you can't actually see anything. We get put into what's called isolation, which is like a warm-up area. You're not allowed to bring phones or headphones, like anything that can transmit a signal. So you're completely cut off from the outside world.
Interesting.
So
all you have to go off of,
all you have to go by is the sounds of the crowd, essentially. Like you can hear whether someone is doing well or whether they've fallen, maybe. And so I actually find it easier to go first, because it's first of all, you know exactly when you have to be on the wall, because there's like a really definite start time, which makes warming up a lot easier, but also it's a lot less time. Like if you're sitting there listening to people cheer and scream and then ooh and ah, you can kind of come up with this narrative of what's happening out on the field of play that may or may not actually be the case. So if you go out first, you don't have to think about it and it's done.
Other people are listening to your oohs and ahs, essentially.
Yeah, basically. Like sometimes you can get useful information. Like if the climbing's going really fast, then you can tell. If it's bouldering and it's going really fast, you know everyone is finishing the boulder fast. And if it's lead and everyone's going really fast, you know that they're all falling at the beginning. So there's some information you can get out of it. You're like, okay, the start of this route's really hard, or these boulders are really easy. I have to conserve my attempts. But yeah, you can also get a false idea of what's actually happening and maybe, you know, work yourself up into a bit of a...
I like state. That. I think more sports need to kind of have like a blind room. Like I'm skiing. Like, oh, I know this is the time I've got to beat. No, don't let them know. Just shove them on the hill and then like let them do what they need to do. Like that kind of makes things more interesting.
Oh, yeah, 100%. I find it crazy in other sports where they can, you know, like see each other's scores beforehand, and you know as the last person that, oh, maybe I don't have to try it. Gonna have to go as hard because the scores are quite low, or it's quite interesting just having to like take those risks with no real information. It's obviously pretty stressful, like in the environment, but it does make for an exciting
much more like I'm thinking like high jump, like we saw that in Tokyo, right? Like they got to a point where it's like, let's just share the medal, you know. It's like, well, if you didn't know what your other competitor jumped, then you're not going to have that. So, like, keep going.
Yeah. Imagine, like, something like that.
Weightlifting.
You jump what you think was the best you could have done, and then someone else comes out and does something completely different or whatever. Like, you have to be entirely intrinsically motivated.
Yeah.
Like, you might be on the wall and you're, like, pushing really hard near the top of the route. And if you knew that everyone had already fallen off before you, maybe you would kind of just not stop, but you wouldn't be giving it 110% versus you have no idea. So you have to give it 110% because you could be in first place, you could be in last place. You have no idea.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Yeah. Can we wrap up with a set of fun get to know yourself questions, which I'll get to in just a moment. But two things I want to touch on beforehand. As I mentioned, we had Osh on the show last week. Now, I sort of asked her the question about, obviously, she's younger than you, but obviously she kind of goes into these Olympics almost as like she's been to the Olympics before, so she can help you with that. But she obviously touched on that you two have been climbing together for many, many years. Mm. And sort of she looks up to you in that aspect. I mean, what's that experience you mean to go with Osh to kind of these Olympics and kind of lean on her a little bit to use some of what she experienced in Tokyo to help you towards your first Olympics?
Oh, it's really special, actually, to share this with Osh. She says she looks up to me, but I also really look up to her in terms of what she's achieved in climbing. She's a real trailblazer, and just a really, really high standard athlete. Being able to have someone that I can like ask those questions to and have a better understanding of the games before I get there is really nice. But also just having someone that I'm wholly familiar and comfortable with as well. Like I know I can be myself around her and vice versa. There are so many unknowns with this Olympics, like, you know, not really knowing who at this stage, we don't even really know who's going to be there as our coach for the games. And so just knowing that at the very least we'll have each other is quite important and quite empowering, I think, going into something so unknown for me like the Olympic Games.
I'm sure, yeah, definitely will help you out then. The other thing that I'll touch on beforehand, we're doing this to all our guests in the lead up to Paris. We have a mascot on this show. We officially have an off-the-podium mascot. Now, I'd like you to meet him.
Oh, my.
First of all, I want you to tell me what he is. Can you tell what he is?
He's a chair.
Thank you.
With
good.
A face and feet and hands and a medal.
And a medal, yes. This is Cherry. Now Cherry's been through a fair bit, as you can see. He's got a couple of bruises, a bit battered and everything along those lines. But inspirational. How can we use this for inspiration for you in Paris, Cam? What do you think, like, if you had a Cherry with you, that he could push you up that wall faster and better and more strategic?
Oh, yeah. You know, I mean, yeah, like you said, Cherry's obviously been through the wars, but that smile on his face isn't going anywhere.
It's the winning grin.
And, you know, he's already got his gold medal. So that's all the motivation you need, you know.
Sharing the advice. Exactly. Dreams come true with Cherry. That's the new motto. As we keep saying, we're going to get some form of Cherry made that we can mass distribute out there, so we'll flick you one, so you can have a Cherry come Paris. If you can see behind me, actually, we have Frige, the actual Paris mascot, which getting a lot of love out there as well. So hug Frige when you're there and kind of get on board. Okay. There, we love the mascots. We're a mascot podcast for sure. As I said, Campbell, we wrap up every single interview with a set of get to know you style questions. As always, this is a questionnaire that was given to Canadian athletes ahead of Rio and Pyeongchang. I'll ask this question straight off the bat. It's a random one, but how are your drawing skills? Are you an artistic person by nature?
No, I'm not very good at drawing.
All right. Well, you don't have to, but if you feel the need to test those, there are always a drawing optional element. You can draw a picture of yourself, draw a picture of an Australian animal. Things like that if you wish to do, send us in. We'll put up on social media to share it out there. We need more summer athletes, Cam. All the winter athletes love it. Summer athletes, you know, catching up to do. So just I'll put it out there. But I'll start off with the first proper question. The greatest Olympian of all time is?
Oh, my God. See, this is the problem is that I'm so climbing-centered and
You can give a climb. I mean, we've had one climbing event at the Olympics, so you can base it on that if you like.
I'm going to say, well, look, I think Janja Garnbret might not be the most accomplished Olympian now, but I think she's, you know, headed that way. I foresee her winning every Olympics in her career.
There you go.
Giving up when she's bored, basically. So
too many gold.
Exciting one to watch.
We'll definitely keep an eye on it. And this is the beauty of this question, right? Like it's not a, you know, people can answer whoever they want to, and that's the way I like it. The first Olympics you remember watching was?
Oh, it was. I guess I have vague memories of Sydney, 2000. And then probably, what was 2004? Was that Athens?
Yeah.
Maybe my most vivid memories like Beijing.
Yep.
But I guess I would have seen at least a little bit of like Sydney and Athens for sure.
I mean, you don't have to admit your age here, Campbell, if you don't want to, but I mean, how old were you during Sydney?
I'm 26 now, so I would have been like two or three.
Wow. Impressive. You remember it. Good job.
Very vague, very, very vague memories of that. I remember I have memories of like going to the parades where they would like pass the Olympic torch through all the cities and stuff. I do have memories of that.
Yeah, there you go. And then I guess you can push towards your own moments like that in Brisbane in 8 years' time, and you'll be able to fully experience it where you will have vivid memories of it.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, little baby Campbell there. Now, look, I feel there's an obvious answer to this one. You can give it if you want to, but otherwise you can answer whatever you want. If you could be any superhero, who would you be?
Oh, that's interesting that you say, like, because I'm guessing you think maybe the answer would be like Spider-Man.
I'm thinking Spider-Man's the obvious answer for your profession, yeah. But I mean, you know.
But I think, you know, obviously he's a much better climber than I am, but like climbing's already what I can do.
True.
So maybe, maybe someone who can like fly or teleport. I feel like there's quite a few of those.
Yeah.
I was just thinking
it could help you at the Olympics. Like if you're Spider-Man,
it would help me. But I think I also think that like having superhuman climbing abilities might like ruin climbing a little bit. Like
too easy. Then, you
know, where's the challenge?
True.
I think someone who could fly, just because I think that's like I would save a lot of money on plane tickets. That's for sure.
Exactly. And teleportation, you wouldn't even need them, right? Like
No jet lag. Like you know.
Click your fingers.
Be jet lag, but you know, like just hop from one country to the next, easy peasy.
In Japan in like 5 minutes, you know, done.
Yeah, there you go.
Easy as that. Your favorite ice cream flavor is?
Oh, salted caramel.
Oh yes, good answer. Yeah. I like it. If you were a baseball player, what would your walk-up music be?
Oh gosh. It's a bit niche, but there's this like Australian artist who has Keelan Mack, who has this song Weigh You Down.
Okay.
And I just think it's like the coolest like dark pop little bop thing. And I find that song is a big psych up. So probably something like that.
Can you have walk up music in climbing?
Sometimes when you go to competitions, not World Cups, but like smaller comps, they might ask you for a song, and they might play that song when you're climbing. It sort of depends on the event and the organizers, but not like officially.
I thought there'd be like a big, like, you know, and ladies and gentlemen, Campbell Harrison, and then they just like, you know, blare it over the speakers or something as
sometimes
you get ready.
Sometimes the organizers will have like, especially when you like, you know, there'll be a comp in Switzerland, then two in France back to back. And it would be a lot of the same team, like same DJ and same commentator and that sort of thing. And sometimes they would have like a particular song for a particular athlete that they would always play when they came out.
Okay. What was your song? Did you ever have like a designated song that always play for you?
No, not for me. I think that you probably only got your own song if you were like consistently in finals.
Right. Okay. I wasn't thinking this, like standing like, oh, he's Australian, Land Down Under or something like that.
Actually, you do get stuff like that. They might play something like that for the Aussies.
Could be worse. There could be other worse songs I guess they could play. Yeah. If you weren't an athlete, what would you be?
Oh, if I wasn't an athlete, I would be maybe a writer.
Writer, nice. Like, are we talking like are we writing fiction books, journalists? I mean, like what sort of writer?
I used to love writing fiction when I was younger. I also used to love the performing arts. Like I had to give up like school musical productions and stuff because they didn't they would always clash with climbing so much. So I feel like maybe I would be more musical and perform more and be a little bit more like artistic, because maybe I would have committed more time to that when I was young. Something like that.
What's your favorite musical?
Oh, my favorite musical. I've seen Wicked a lot of times. I feel like that's a basic answer, but I've seen Wicked like 4 times and I'm going to see it again when it comes to Melbourne.
Nice.
So
yeah, it's just left Sydney, I believe. It just ended, I think, in the last couple of days.
My boyfriend bought me tickets to see it in Sydney for my birthday. And then it was the weekend we were in Sydney to see it. They announced it was coming to Melbourne. And we were like, oh, we could have just waited, but I'm not mad that we didn't, because now we go and see it again.
Bonus though. I actually just saw... I was in New York and I saw Back to the Future, the musical on Broadway, and got to say, amazing. You would think that's one of these ones, like how do you turn it into a musical? But they do. And I mean, the special effects alone are worth the price of admission. So.
Oh yeah. Yeah. It's definitely on my bucket list to go see a musical on Broadway. I've been to the West End, but yeah, Broadway's on the list.
It's definitely worth it. I'll say that. Your guilty pleasure snack is?
Oh, guilty pleasure snack. I feel like I don't have guilty pleasure snacks, but maybe I'm a big ice cream guy. I really do like ice cream. I feel like the weirdest one, like I said before in the pre-interview, I had like muesli and yogurt for breakfast. I feel like muesli and yogurt as like a snack is just my favorite thing ever. And so like any time of day, like breakfast, mid-afternoon, right before bed, like muesli and yogurt is my go-to. So
I'm on board with that, Campbell, because like there are so many things. Like I'm keto at the moment, so I can't eat it. But like when I'm not, like Weet-Bix, I randomly love Weet-Bix, and I'll be sitting around on a
Well,
Saturday night.
breakfast food
Yeah.
is, yeah, I'll happily eat breakfast food any time of day.
Exactly. Like cereal's great. Like just bowl of cereal at 9 o'clock at
Oh,
night. Why not?
yeah,
You know?
for sure.
On board with that. I like that. The most recent TV show that you binge watched is.
Most recent that I binge watched, we just rewatched the first season of Jessica Jones,
Oh,
which
yeah.
I'd seen before my partner hadn't. And I think that is re that was really, really good TV. Really enjoy it. So yeah, that's the last thing I binge watched.
Good answer. I like it. Last one for you today, Campbell. Your favorite place in the world to compete is?
Oh, my favorite place in the world to compete. Maybe in Innsbruck in Austria. I think it's kind of it's a bit of a second home for me. I spend so much time training there in the comp season. And so yeah, having World Cups there feels like, like a bit of a home World Cup almost.
Great, great. Any prospect of an Australian World Cup at one point in the future?
Yeah, definitely. I think we're supposed to have some comps before we host the Olympics in Brisbane. So we should hopefully be seeing some World Cups happen in Australia before 2032.
Great.
Fingers crossed.
We'll cross those fingers. Fantastic. Campbell, it's been a lot of fun, mate. Really appreciate your time. Before we let you go, social media, people, where can they follow you? Instagram, TikTok, places like that.
Yeah, Instagram is probably the best place to follow me. Campbell underscore Harrison 547. I have like a broadcast channel that I share my goings on in the lead up to Paris. I have a Australian Sports Foundation crowdfund as well. If people would like to support me there, it's always appreciated. Yeah, but yeah, feel free to just chuck me a follow and tag along for the ride. And yeah, hope they enjoy getting to learn a little bit more about the sport.
Well, we definitely look forward to seeing you compete in Paris. As I said, we fell in love with the sport 3 years ago in Tokyo, and we're looking forward to seeing you again. Best of luck for everything moving forward. And look, I'm saying this now, we'll get you back on the show afterwards with a nice shiny medal around your neck. How does that
Oh,
sound?
yeah. Yeah, I can only hope.
And a massive thanks to Campbell for his time on the show. Fascinating insight into learning more about it. It really does interest me beyond belief, this sport of sport climbing. And I'm so excited to see it once again at the Olympics. Of course, we fell in love with it, as you heard me say multiple times today and last week, in regards to seeing it for the first time in Tokyo. So we're very much looking forward to seeing it again. But learning like the finger training, like it's so obvious when you think about it, using the fingers gripping onto the walls and everything along those lines, but just that unique aspect of it too. And just hearing his emotions around qualifying for Paris. And by all means, go to his Instagram page, find it. It's his pinned post on his page. Just the footage of him qualifying for the Olympics. It really is something else. So I highly recommend that as well. So great to have Campbell on the show. Obviously great last week to have Oceana on the show as well. And I would like to send a special thanks to Esty over at Sport Climbing Australia for helping us arrange those interviews as well. We've definitely enjoyed having both Campbell and Osh on the show, and we're looking forward to seeing how they go in Paris in a few months' time. You want to see the video version of this interview? Remember to look us up on YouTube. You can see all of our video interviews on there as well. And while you're online, make sure to follow us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, TikTok, Threads. We're on all of them. Subscribe to us on all the podcast platforms, wherever you listen to your podcast from, and we would love to hear from you as well. Remember to leave some feedback along the way. Next week, we're going winter. We're switching gears, going to Winter Olympics. We've got Jenny Lyons on the show, previously Jenny Owens, now Jenny Lyons, and a great chat with Jenny. If anybody knows a lot about Jenny, she is a three-time Olympian in two different sports, if you don't mind, in both alpine and freestyle skiing, and a fascinating insight into her career over the years. And potentially a comeback, maybe? You'll have to find out next week from Jenny. And after that, we've got some other great coverage coming your way, more opening ceremony reviews, and a great chat with a great historic making Olympian in a few weeks' time as well. Keep teasing about that one, but I don't want to give too much away. I like to keep you a bit surprised. Like you're a sport climber, not knowing about your route before you go out there onto the course. As always, remember to like the Birmingham Bull, Jason Momoa, all the regular things we say at the end. Thanks again to Campbell and for you for listening. My name is Ben. This is Off the Podium. And remember to go left. Parlez-vous français? Parlez-vous français? Si tu peux ne pas aller, allez tomber la chemise.